Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Alyssa Friedland, who's out with a new novel, The Intermission. It's available now everywhere, and the book tells us the story of Jonathan and Cass Coyne, a married couple who decide to separate for 6 months to figure out whether their marriage is something they both want. And we read stories of their relationship from each person's perspective as they experience life apart from each other. Alyssa, great concept for a book, by the way, but at the beginning of the book, you write that the idea for the book came from when you watched your husband load the dishwasher. Seemingly a mundane thing to observe in your life, but how did you extrapolate that particular observation into an entire novel?
Well, I've been hearing a lot of questions about this dishwasher thing because people are very passionate about the way to load a dishwasher, so apparently I've tapped into something controversial. I had already written my first book, and I was looking for a concept for my second book and just sort of waiting for inspiration to hit me. And when I was watching my husband load the dishwasher and he was doing it so painfully slowly and really wasting time, and I would have just thrown all the dishes in and been done with it, I thought, I'm going to write about marriage because it's such an interesting concept that two people are meant to build a life together, cohabit, raise a family together when they have a million differences between them. And so I decided, that's it. Marriage is the topic for my next book.
Well, before the separation in the book, before the intermission, Jonathan and Cass, they're at a friend's wedding, and they make a bet on how long the marriage would last. It's something they've done. I had a girlfriend in college who would make similar predictions, but she would do it based upon the engagement announcements in the paper, and she would do it for strangers based upon what their jobs were.
Ooh, I love that.
Well, you know, these are good people, but they play these wicked games. Why do we do that?
I think everyone is fascinated by what goes on behind closed doors, frankly. I think it's just a natural curiosity that we all have, and we really can't fault ourselves for it, even though, yes, of course, it's not, you know, our best showing to be betting on other people's relationships, but it's not like we have the power by any means to, like, you know, we predict 5 years to make that come true or to, you know, this or that. I think it's, you know, you have a little bit of information about someone. Everybody's intrigued by what is the secret to a lasting relationship? What is compatibility all about? And I think many of us, everybody, I think, has seen a couple that surprises them because they just don't seem like a match, and yet it works. And then we've seen couples where they seem on paper, like in these engagement announcements, they both went to similar schools and have similar families, and everything looks perfect on paper, and it completely falls apart. So I think all this anecdotal experience of watching this in couples around us leads people to sort of make these wagers.
Do you think it's something people, when they're younger, do? Because it seems like, if I would guess a couple in their 60s, I would think they couldn't care less about another couple. Maybe I'm wrong, but have you seen that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like I've seen it with my parents because now it's the children of their friends getting married. And, yeah, I think that they're interested. And they also have a longer perspective on marriage than, you know, the contemporaries of the people getting married, the young people, you know? So maybe older people think, you know, can spot things that might be red flags later on because they've, you know, had longer relationships and just have more of a historical timeline to look back on.
But then when we do that, do you think it gets into people's heads that, you know, if we're thinking about them this way, God, what must they be thinking about us?
Yes, and I make that point in the book. I mean, I have that in the prologue where Cass and Jonathan start feeling very uncomfortable in their seats when it occurs to them, if we're doing this, then other people are doing this also. And nobody likes the spotlight turned on them.
Well,
for something negative.
In the novel, Jonathan, successful hedge fund analyst, Cass was working in the theater marketing industry. They live in New York. From the outside, they do look like a perfect couple, but Cass comes from poverty. And how much does this marriage of two people from different sides of the tracks, if you will, influence the problems that arise in their marriage?
I think it's a huge factor. And I think it's part of the attraction and it's part of the problem. Because while Jonathan wants to break out of the mold of this sort of very preppy, privileged upbringing, there are inherent problems, like in ways that he doesn't even realize he's offending Cass and his family's offending Cass. And there's a scene in the book where his father talks about a certain hotel and how he doesn't like that it's now, they're offering some better competitive rates and now it's been sort of taken over by, like, people he considers to be, you know, beneath their ilk. And, you know, it's not the meanest comment that can be imagined. I mean, many parents and in-laws have said much worse things, and he wasn't directing it at Cass specifically, but she's wounded. It's like death by a thousand cuts. And I think vice versa, Cass is like, you've never really had it hard. You've never really known what I've known, where, you know, you get evicted from your home and you're constantly watching your mother have her credit card cut in half. So as much as you, you know, think you're an empathetic person and you know where I came from, unless you live it, you don't know it.
There's an observation Jonathan makes probably halfway through the novel, and he says the problem with putting your wife on a pedestal is that she has nowhere to go but down. And, of course, there are potentially higher and higher pedestals that somebody could reach, but nonetheless, the point remains that he made there. Do you see the pedestal thing as something men tend to do more than women?
I do, actually. I think that men can have the capacity to be incredibly, incredibly smitten at a certain point, and towards the beginning, and really, really idealize someone. And maybe women are quicker to find fault. And so, in the beginning, I would say. So I would say that, and I don't have, like, any sociological studies about this, just
sure.
You know, my own group of friends. I have seen my friends, the men, like, absolutely think that they are dating, you know, the most perfect human to walk the earth. And then, you know, nobody's perfect. So it eventually gets shattered, whereas my female friends in the beginning of a relationship are, you know, praising their partner, very happy, but there'll always be some sort of caveat. I wish he was, you know, it would be nice if he was a couple inches taller. I wish he had a little bit of a better job, you know, this or that. I think that they just recognize the faults more readily in the beginning.
Does it get to a point then for women that, all right, once they're past all of that, then they're willing to go all the way in as far as, you know, giving over their entire heart, maybe agreeing to be married, whereas men tend to want everything right at the beginning and then they'll work out all the details later?
I think that's exactly right. I totally agree with what you just said. And, of course, these are generalizations, and there's a million exceptions to the rule, but yes, I agree with that.
Well, the idea for the six-month break came from Cass, and Jonathan was completely blindsided by it. His initial reaction was to think that it was because Cass's friend was going through a divorce, and we've all experienced a divorce of friends as we've gotten older, but what does hearing the stories of other couples as to why their marriage failed influence how we think about our own relationships?
I think it's just impossible to not hear a story, a good one, a bad one. I mean, I think it's not just the bad ones. I think that when you know, I had someone walk into my home the other day, and my husband had sent me flowers for, it was the 13th anniversary of the day we met. Now, he's not typically that romantic. This happens to be an unbelievable gesture. She happened to come over that day. She saw the flowers. She asked me what they were for, and she was like, you know, joking around. She's like, oh, I hate my husband now. I can't remember the last time he sent me flowers. You know, so it's the good and the bad. I think when you see a couple that every time you have dinner with them, they walk into the restaurant holding hands, or he's always, like, got his hand around her shoulder, or this or that, or she, you know, is taking care and knows exactly what he wants to order, and you see these loving gestures, or the negative, you know, you can't help but compare to your own relationship.
And
I think it cuts both ways, the bad and the good.
Well,
you compare.
Cass came off as kind of heartless at the beginning of the intermission, of the actual intermission, not the book, but it was her idea. She left town. Her biggest concern initially was the traffic in Los Angeles, and at one point she sent a text to Jonathan asking if he was eating all right, and it made Jonathan feel like he was a child instead of her equal. How much of this behavior for Cass do you think is a defense mechanism for what she was about to undertake?
I think Cass is all about defense mechanisms, and I hope that readers will connect with the journey and that their opinion of her will change over the course of the book. I mean, she's very used to being on her own more than most people. I mean, she kind of raised herself as a child, which, you know, most people do not have that experience. And she's very afraid to be in this sort of more equal, codependent relationship. She's used to people disappointing her, and I think that she's afraid to have children with anybody. You know, Jonathan is a, you know, as people find out in the book, he's not perfect either, you know, but he, you know, he's a pretty good guy, and she's just afraid. I mean, she wants this more stable future for herself, but I think it's hard for her to even believe it could be happening to her.
Well, it seems like this whole idea of an intermission, it's just a recipe for disaster for, I would say, from a lot of couples, or probably even most couples, because it has the potential to create more secrets to hide from your spouse as opposed to fewer. You're going to have new sexual experiences, new romantic things you do, you're going to want to hide it from them. So as that work, this probably doesn't work for the majority of couples, right?
No, and I think Cass and Jonathan are unique, and that's sort of the point of the book. While I think there are elements of their relationship and in their personalities that everyone will find something to relate to, every marriage and every relationship is a unique story between two people. There cannot be a universal novel, universal fictional story about marriage, because we are such complex people, and that was the point of the book. I built very complex, multifaceted characters because that's what we all are. We all have, you know, very unique, complex emotions that belong only to us. Only we have had our unique set of life experiences. And then you put two people together who are totally different. So there are some universal themes about marriage, but ultimately this is a story of Cass and Jonathan.
How difficult was it for you as a writer to switch between the narrative between female and male perspective?
That was the best part of it for me. I'm not saying it was easy, but that's the part I liked the most. And it wasn't so much having to write a man's voice, because I've read many novels written by male authors, told from the perspective of a man. I felt comfortable with the man's voice. I would say it was interesting just that it was two different people telling the same story. So, you know, it was the whole interest in having two people have the same experience but then come away with different opinions. So you would have, you know, you go out to dinner with somebody, you and your partner go out for dinner with somebody, you get in the car at the end of the dinner, and one, the wife says to the husband, "Oh, I did not like that guy. He was so rude and so obnoxious." And the husband says, "What do you mean? I thought he was lovely. He was great. What are you talking about?" You know, and it's like, were we at the same dinner? And Cass and Jonathan have a lot of those experiences where they are at the same thing together, but their takeaways are really different. So it was important to me to capture that accurately, how two people can be in the same room and come away with different perspectives on what happens.
You made me laugh about a month ago. You had a piece in the Washington Post about, you were talking about purging your home of baby stuff, like a high chair. I never even thought about that whole idea of having such an emotional impact on somebody, but what was that like for you?
I mean, I am a purger in general, so I don't hold on to things that much, and I don't have a problem cleaning out my own closet. So I come from a perspective of purging, you know, the whole Marie Kondo magic art of tidying up. A nice tidy home can make a person, you know, more zen, more calm and happy. But the baby stuff is harder. There's no doubt. It's easier to get rid of a sweater than it is to get rid of a high chair. But once I started, I couldn't stop. And I was really excited to move into that new phase of my life where I have older children. I can take them all out for dinner. We can go to restaurants. I'm not saying it's easy. I mean, my oldest is not even 5 years old yet. But he doesn't, you know, require all the equipment. I'm not bringing a diaper bag, and I'm not bringing a bib. And feels very freeing.
All right. Well, this novel is just a fantastic one. It's called The Intermission by Alyssa Friedland. The book is available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Berkeley. Get out and check it out. It's a great read for sitting in the air conditioner this summer, or sitting outside, depending on where you live. Alyssa, fantastic offering. Thanks for joining us today to talk about it.
Thank you so much.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
I've been sleeping all alone, Lord, I miss you.